everyone, and welcome to another PCast of the podcast series by MSD Animal Health for and by professionals in the swine sector. I'm Alex Carvalho. I'm the Global Marketing Director for MSD Animal Health. And today we have the pleasure to talking with Sandra Bloom, which is the head of the German National Reference Laboratory for ASF at the Friedrich Loeffler Institute. Welcome, Sandra, and thanks for sharing this time with us here at DSPHM in Thessaloniki, Greece.
Thank you, Alex. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Thank you so much. So we know that you're one of the speakers of this international congress, so we wanted to share some time with you. So, you know, first of all, how are you?
Thank you. I arrived yesterday and I really enjoy the sun of Thessaloniki, and I already had my speech, so I'm fine.
Excellent. May I ask you what the speech was about?
Actually, it was about African swine fever and prevention and control options, a bit also the future of it, because in the end, we are dealing with the disease now for really a couple of years, and we have to find a way to deal with it in a more sustainable way, also talking about resources.
This is excellent, because this was actually the topic I wanted to speak with you about. So, just generally speaking, you know, and there was some years of evolution and some case here and there, you know, how would you reflect the actual status of African swine fever in Europe?
Actually, it's not so easy because the situation is different in different parts of Europe. We are now dealing with this disease since 2014, and in the end, we have different scenarios. Mm-hmm. If you look at the map, the disease hasn't spread like a Ferrari through Europe. It came to us from the eastern borders, and if you look at the map, it's still there, but it also made some jumps. If you look at the eastern part, it's mainly driven by the wild boar population, and mm-hmm. this gives us really a headache, because just imagine, how would you try to combat the disease in the abundant wild boar population? You cannot just go there and ask them to come for culling or whatever. Yeah. So you really get to your limits when you deal with that. And then we have another situation in southeastern Europe, where especially in Romania, there's a really grave situation where we have more or less all of the sectors of pig production, also wild boar affected, and they are really suffering from this disease. And then we have some new events that gives us also headache. It's the introduction into new areas of Italy, but also the reintroduction into Czech Republic. So African swine fever is really a pig pandemic, and we will struggle to control it.
This is it's definitely something to take into consideration, especially like in the swine industry, right? Because like you're saying, I do understand once you have it in the wild boar population, once it's difficult to control, and then the spreadable possibilities are infinite. For sure. I mean, another factor that maybe could be taken into consideration, and I know it played some role to a degree in the past, is the human factor. You know, how do you think this, is this to be considered as a main transmitter, one of the, you know, what are your thoughts on this?
Definitely. I always say that the human is the best vector of African swine fever. The problem with human is that they're humans. So when you talk about biosecurity, that would really keep your farm safe. Mm-hmm. There is a biosecurity on paper, and then there is a biosecurity that you live. And we have just learned today from one of the talks that 50% of some farmers or farm attendees, they didn't even wash their hands, because they have the rule. But if you monitor them, there are a lot of small mistakes. And I am afraid that especially these small mistakes are the ones that give ASF the opportunity to enter farms. To be honest, I think African swine fever in the domestic pig population is something that you can control in most of our settings. Because if you look at the data, we do not really have so many secondary infections. So we are not spreading the disease from the farm to farm. It's rather keeping the disease really out of every farm. And there are small things. There is really changing of boots. not going after hunting directly into stables. This should be common sense, but unfortunately, it's still there. And I'm completely convinced that all these jumps are man-made.
Interesting. So now if I add, you know, the two previous subjects that we're talking about, so the fact that it is present in Europe and it is, you know, it is definitely present in Europe, and the human factor specifically with regards to biosecurity and consciousness plays a big role on it. Do you think, and you know, especially looking into like a recent human pandemic like COVID, how do you think, or do you think that vaccines would be the missing tool to control African swine fever or not? What are your thoughts on this?
It's actually a very good question. And I know that you like black and white answers, but there is 50 shades of gray. I'm sorry. But to answer your question, I do think that vaccines could help us, especially in the wild boar population. We have an example where it worked. It was classical swine fever, where we used bait vaccination in affected populations. It worked well. And there I see the need. It could also help us in countries like Romania, Bulgaria, where we have these outbreaks in the domestic pig population that are not easy to control. But the vaccine is not the holy grail. We always expect the vaccine to solve the issue. Mm-hmm. But there are many examples where a good vaccine did not do a good vaccination scheme because the management was bad. So in the end, the vaccine will not replace biosecurity or culling measures or diagnostics, but it can be definitely something in our toolbox that helps us in different conditions and in the wild boar. And I have worked on the testing of vaccines over the last years now, and I have at least the hope that we can have a vaccine like that. It will be a political question whether or not we use it, mm-hmm. because it will have trade implications.
And this is I can see this. And, you know, my question after this is actually like, are there any places in the world where actually we have some kind of vaccine, you know, maybe not the ideal vaccine, and how are they working? Is this happening?
In the end, yes. Most of the headlines, for example, from Vietnam, was that they are now, or they licensed now almost three at least live vaccines. And in the end, there is success with these vaccines, but there's also some bad headlines. In the end, at least two of the candidates I have tested also in my lab. And in these very confined settings, they are efficacious, they are also safe. But you learn from the field that if you go to population where there is classical swine fever, there is pseudorabies, there is PRRS, there's some other diseases, that the picture is, of course, a bit more diverse. But in the end, this licensing of live vaccines in Vietnam gives us some field data to build on. Mm-hmm. And the EU has put new money into a project or in a call for projects. And in the end, some groups have now candidates that they would really like to bring to the market. It will include, of course, a central licensing procedure in mm-hmm. the European Union through the EMA. Most of these vaccines are GMOs of high biosecurity level. So we have to discuss how to do it, but this is definitely an option. And Vietnam is a good example. The bad headlines were mainly from provinces where the vaccine was not well managed in the vaccination campaign. But we also have some bad experience, for example, from China, where a lot of illegal vaccines have been used, and they are creating more problems than they solve.
Absolutely.
You get chronic infections, you get animals that look like PRRS disease, and they come down with some vaccine-related disease. So yes, vaccines in Asia give us an example, but for both directions, in to the good and to the worse.
Hmm. And I can see, you know, I can see vaccines working or being part of the toolbox, as you're saying, when we're talking about domestic animals or industrial production. But, you know, when we're talking about wild boars, and for me personally, that is the key. You know, we need to sort the source, not the aftermath of the problem, but just my personal opinion. I mean, what are your takes on this? And, you know, we know, of course, we have the traditional intramuscular vaccine, some more advanced technology like intradermal, but, you know, for the wild boar population, you know, tell us all about that. What are your thoughts on this?
In my professional life, I have been working also mainly on classical swine fever. And there we have a bait vaccination strategy. In the end, a live vaccine can be given also orally. There is, of course, if you do it intramuscular, it's more the efficiency of vaccination is higher because you really deliver it to the animal. If you go for an oral vaccination, the animal has proteases in the saliva. You don't know if it chews it correctly, if it really is whatever, a low pH, high pH, or whatever in the mouth. It is a bit more error-prone, but it works if you give it in a bait. So for classical swine fever, it was in the end a corn based matrix that contained a blister with the vaccine. And it has been used in France and Germany and some other countries with high success. It has been used with lower success in, for example, Japan. It is something where you have to have a very good vaccination scheme, but it works. If you do the same for ASF, I have recently done a proof of concept study where we inoculated wild boar with just one dose of the vaccine orally. And we did it with 8 wild boar, and 4 of them seroconverted and really reacted. When we did the challenge infection, these animals were completely protected. So there was no problem. But 50% did not really get vaccinated by oral administration of the vaccine. It shows you that that African swine fever, oral infection, but also vaccination is a bit more difficult. Mm-hmm. But if you, for example, would go to the protocol that we had for CSF, it was 3 double vaccinations a year. The animal has a chance to eat another bait next time.
I see.
So this is something I would like to model, actually. There is a modeling exercise done by several computer models, and it could give us an idea if this is helpful, if you get this kind of coverage that is 40-50%, or if this even gives you more problems than you solve. But I'm quite convinced that we can have this this kind of vaccine, and one of our projects will definitely target this issue.
Okay. So I mean, I'm reflecting on your words, and you know, and maybe it's there, maybe it's a long shot, maybe we are halfway towards, you know, all the toolbox that we need to tackle African swine fever. So, you know, maybe for our audience and the people there that are listening to us, you know, could you give us some basic measurements how, in the meanwhile, you know, to avoid African swine fever entering our farms?
Yes, it's again not too much of a black and white picture, because if you ask me what is a risky behavior, is there arthropods, is there small animals, is there something like feed, food, bedding, most of these parts are not a high risk, but they give us small risk that can accumulate to something that leads to introduction. And that's why I would say that we have to take care of these kind of small risks. If you have a farm, try to really live biosecurity. It can be basic biosecurity, keep wild boar out, change boots, wash hands, this kind of stuff. ASF is an envelope virus, so the disinfection and also the cleaning makes a difference. So if you really do that, and we know that ASF is often not very contagious, then you are on a much safer side. If you then, for example, go for talking about feed, that you respect the storage times that are asked for, and that you look for straw, also some lay down times, then I'm quite convinced that you can keep the virus out of your holding. The problem is really this kind of, as I said, this accumulation of small probabilities. It's not like there is a high risk by rodents or adipose or whatever. But if you try to mitigate all this risk a bit, like doing pest control, doing this kind of basic measures, I'm quite sure that you can reduce the risk. And there are several examples where holdings were able to maintain their business even in heavily affected areas. Nevertheless, I'm often also asked, couldn't we just leave the wild boar be and just protect our domestic herds? This is also, again, very difficult. Because when we look at the virus characteristics or the genomic profile of the viruses that we find in domestic pig herds, it's in a high majority the virus that is in the local wild boar population. So if you have a high pressure in the field, like you have carcasses, you have hunters coming and going, you have mushroom pickers, you have normal people moving, you are also moving the virus, and you are in the end increasing the overall risk. And that's why, in my opinion, we should not stop trying to control the disease also in the wild boar. It is actually a very expensive thing. And especially in Germany, there's now a lot of discussion. We spent so much money. We did not really get rid of the disease. How long would you like us to maintain these efforts? And as I said, I understand that this is really resource intensive, but not doing it would mean that you have an increased risk for the surroundings and also for the spread that we have seen, like the jumps to Belgium to other parts. Yeah, in the end, it is something that will probably accompany us for a couple of years still.
I can see it will be a multi-step approach and a long process, but I totally see your point. So Sandra, I think we could, you know, we could continue to talk all day. Yeah, but perhaps we should leave some time to be able to greet our colleagues who are attending the Congress here in Thessaloniki and also attend some of the interesting presentations. I know personally you already did yours that are planned in the program. So, dear Sandrino, thank you very much for your time and for sharing your knowledge with us. And I really hope to see you soon.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Dear friends, we'll meet in another podcast at ESPHM 2023. Remember that you can listen to all podcasts by MSD Animal Health Series by visiting our website, as well as any of the major learning platforms. Thank you. Many greetings for all the entire MSD Swine Health team. Stay well.